Welcome to another edition of Anthony T's Horror Show. I'm Anthony T. In this edition, it's the final part of the Best of 2024 episodes, where yours truly will be joined by Brandon and Dave from PBD Horror Podcast, as we'll chat about our favorite films from 2024, both in the horror side, and we may chat also about other films as well that got released in 2024 that are non-horror. Now, before I go into that portion of the show, let's go back to last year's best of list, the best of 2023, and what I chose as the 10 best horror films of 2023. Number 10, I had Scream 6, 9, The Sacrifice Game, 8, Give Me Pity, 7, Onyx, The Fortress, and The Talisman of Souls, 6, Saw 10, 5, The Outwaters, 4, Infinity Pool, 3, No One Will Save You, 2, Talk to Me, and my favorite film of 2023 was Evil Dead Rise. When I come back, I'll be joined by Brandon and Dave from PBD Horror as we'll chat about the best of 2024.
Welcome to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. A weekly podcast where the discussion is about the most recent horror and genre films. Intelligent talk on a genre that deserves intelligence. A conversation between co-hosts discussing not only the film, but also the connotation that the directors and screenwriters are trying to articulate. If you want more than a review, listen to Dark Discussions.
And speaking of perception, there's just one more scene I want to talk about, which is after Caleb discovers that Kyoto's a robot, Kyoto kind of peels off her skin, showing him what's underneath.
Now, wait a minute. I know where you're going with this, but tell me you weren't already thinking this 15 minutes earlier in the film. Exactly what he's thinking at that moment.
Which is he's a robot, too.
Oh, I consider the possibility.
Right, and that's what I like, is the fact that the writers were smart enough to know that this is what the audience would be thinking.
We've all seen Blade Runner.
Right. Exactly.
www.darkdiscussions.com, wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome back to Anthony T's Horror Show. I am here with Brandon and David from PVD Horror, as they are here to chat with me about the top 10 films of 2024. As this is the third and final part of the year-end review. How you doing today, Brandon and David?
Doing good, man. Can't complain. Thanks for having us on the show.
Yeah, definitely, man. Thank you very much. We were looking forward to this.
Now, tell everyone about PVD Horror, first of all.
PVD Horror, it's a local... We're in Rhode Island, so for Anthony T, this is a local horror... community that we have built, from podcasts to movie screenings, comic books, everything basically going on. Dave, anything else you want to add to this?
Yeah, we have, we've done vendor markets, and we're just keeping things for the genre, for Rhode Island, for all the neighboring states, just trying to give people stuff to do and content to be able to enjoy and just connect with people who love the genre as much as us.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a good thing, because if you're in the Rhode Island area, there isn't many things to do horror-wise.
Yeah, other than the big events like the conventions and stuff like that. Other than that, not so much.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into the list. But before we get into the list, I always like to ask a couple of questions beforehand. First up, worst film of 2024. Let's start with Brandon.
My worst film of 2024 definitely probably has to go to Night Swim. Night Swim or Imaginary, one of them.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
Nah.
So, Anthony, I decided to take a different route because I would probably have said Night Swim as well. Mm. But I was actually, for this one, I decided I was going to do the one that was probably my biggest disappointment, and also I didn't enjoy it. And I'm going to go with Beetlejuice. I really did not enjoy that film. And I know that's a hot take, but I figured I'd come out here with a hot take. So, that film was a big letdown for me.
Mm-hmm.
You could go to a Night Swim and made it a clean sweep.
Because, all right, I just wanted to be difficult. I'm sorry.
Because literally, my worst film was Night Swim. And there's a story to this. I almost went to see this film in theaters. If it wasn't for a Jason Statham film that was playing around that time as Night Swim was in theaters, I would have ended up seeing Night Swim, then I would have ended up going on a profanity-tized rant on my YouTube channel, because I can't go on my podcast.
Oh, okay.
Because literally I'm trying to keep the language.
I feel you. So you went to go see The Beekeeper instead of Night Swim?
Yeah, which is a better film than Night Swim.
Okay. All right. That's big.
Jason Statham fan.
Okay. Yeah. There you go.
An honorable dismention to The Exorcism.
Oh, man.
I've seen
Night Swim twice in the theater.
Twice?
Twice. I did it to myself.
Why?
He couldn't believe how bad it was.
I had to check it out again. You know, I was like, let me see.
Hey, was it better on the second watch?
It was a little bit better, but it was still a letdown.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
That film, I thought, was unreleasable.
Yeah.
It was unreleasable. And people complain that the Toxic Avenger is unreleasable. This is the definition of an unreleasable film.
Well, yeah, I think the wrong people are in charge of that department. But, Anthony, let me ask you, what did you think was a worse film, Imaginary or Night Swim? Did you think they were equally as bad, or was Night Swim top?
I didn't see Imaginary. I didn't even bother seeing Imaginary, because I had a feeling this was going to be a bad year for Blumhouse.
Mm.
I'm really kind of worried a little bit about The Wolfman.
Yes. Going to talk about that after, yeah, for sure.
But
it looks good to me.
It looks good. I have faith in Leigh Whannell.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping, as this episode would have it, I would have seen this film before this episode aired, so... Mm.
Yeah.
So you probably may or may not get a review of this film on this episode. I have not decided on that yet.
Hopefully we won't get a profanity review on your YouTube page after you see
this. I really don't see a world where I'd give a film a profanity review.
That's even more reason. Like, if you do see it and it's a big letdown, you might be that upset that you're going to go on YouTube and start swearing your brains out. So we'll see. Let's hope not.
I hope not. I love Lene Whannell. Seriously.
Yeah, he was a good guy.
I really think he's a better director than writer, in my opinion.
Now, it's the same crew behind the Invisible Man film, right? So
yeah.
So I loved that movie. That movie was great, so...
That was great. Upgrade was great.
Yeah, definitely. Upgrade was
great. Oh, crazy. Upgrade, yeah, yep.
I think that's underrated.
Oh, definitely.
Yep.
That was on my top pick of that year, that film released. You
know, isn't it funny how, like, that year, though, we were all saying how it was underrated, but everybody was talking about it, and then, like, just nobody was talking about it after that.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like nobody talks about it anymore. But that year got some talk.
I wonder what year it released. I mean, not year, but the month. Maybe was it January, February? Because a lot of those films kind of get stuck. You know what I mean? So you get lost.
Or get lost in the summer where all the big blockbusters are, too.
See, it doesn't scare you that Wolfman's getting released in January?
No, because remember, I went to the New York Comic Con, and Blumhouse is pumping out, like, 10 movies this year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they got 10 movies coming out this year.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, make it 10 2.
Bombs. Hopefully it's 9 bombs, not 10.
Or 8. You got to make it 2.
It might be a strong year for them. It might be a strong year.
I feel like Megan 2.0, that's not a film I'm, like, super excited about, but, I mean, I'll definitely check it out. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I think it will be better, even better than the first one, because I think they know what to do with that film. Like, it's a pretty easy formula. People love dolls that kill. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not brain surgery to make a film like that, but I think that they'll add even more action in there and violence, and I feel like that will probably be a decent sequel. I could be totally wrong, but I feel like they could make a decent sequel out of that. Mm.
And they'll probably find some way to go viral again.
Yeah, and that's the key, right? They have to, because that's what drew in that whole younger audience.
Yeah. So.
Well, I was happy because with the first one, when it released on physical media, they released it with like an unrated version, you know what I mean? So you were able to go back and kind of like see some more of the gore and better kills and stuff like that, little longer scenes. Which I think was definitely missing from, you know, the theater experience for that film. But I understand it was PG-13, so.
And you're I wonder if they'll go with an R for the sequel.
I don't know.
That'd be interesting.
I doubt
hard
it.
Hard R.
Mm. I don't think they want to lose that target audience, you know what I mean? Because I think that's why, you know, we talk about Night Swim and Imaginary. But like I said before, like Anthony on our show, you know, I said at the end of the day, these films aren't made for us. They're made for those teenagers that's roaming the malls on Friday nights, Saturday nights, that can just get dropped off and go to the theater to hang out without their parents, you know what I mean? So it is what it is, you know what I mean? And then, you know, I think that they just caught the heat of it because it was the first movie that released of the year, and so released in January. But I feel as though if Night Swim would have released in the summertime, I think it would have got a lot of less heat, you know what I mean? Because it was just, the attention was like, okay, what are we going to do? How are we starting the year off? And then we're like, oh, with this piece of shit? And then it was just like, ah, all right. But I think it's definitely the target, like, date of the release, and I think that this upcoming year, I think Wolfman might change that approach of how things will look shaped in the year of 2025.
I'm hoping.
Yeah.
Well, by the time this episode airs, we'll find out if it's good or not.
Yeah, I know. That's the anticipation.
Because we are recording this on the 13th of January, so by this film is out.
Yeah.
So now, what was your worst film of the year?
Night Swim.
Night Swim was that too? Okay, all right. There we go.
Yeah, it was worse than Madam Web.
I heard Madam Web was terrible. I still have not seen it, so a lot of people were like, don't pick it up.
I heard that they actually, people were like exaggerating about how bad it was for some reason. I don't know. I haven't seen it either, and I'm not ever going to, but.
Yeah. Overall, I think Marvel has fallen off anyway, so it hasn't even been, I didn't really care for Venom either, so it's like, you know.
Oh, the new one?
Yeah, I didn't care for it at all. Did you like Anthony?
I haven't seen it yet. I've not seen that one yet. I've seen the new Deadpool film, which is good.
Yeah.
And I thought the Agatha All Along TV series was very good.
Yeah. That was the thing. Deadpool definitely pulled Marvel back up, but I think they've been kind of hurting too. So I've heard even Kraven was terrible, and I was able to check out the first 20 minutes, and I was like, blown away. I was like, oh, shit, I can't wait to check this movie out. And then when it released, I heard so many people giving it negative reviews, and I was just like, ah, man, I still haven't checked it out, but I'll check it out when it comes out on physical media.
I think Marvel just needs to regroup. I think people are bored with it, and they just need to regroup and come up with a new approach.
I think they're starting to regroup, I think, a little bit. They're not going to rush and do 10 million things anymore.
Yeah, it seems like DC's picking up their pieces. You know, I mean, James Gunn's over there getting ready to do this Superman movie. So
that looks interesting.
Yeah.
I definitely want to see it because of James Gunn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe it'll be the year we finally get a good Superman movie.
Yeah. It's hoping.
I'm hoping this is the year because you got James Gunn.
Yeah.
And he's done very well so far with DC with his Peacemaker show.
Yeah. Yep.
But we are getting way off topic here.
No, but I'm going to bring it right back to you. Shout out to James Gunn because James Gunn started off in Troma.
Yep, Troma, Tromeo, and Juliet. Right back for you,
Anthony. Brought it right back to horror for you.
Oh, I'm sorry, Anthony. Did you ask us about our top films? Is that what you were asking?
Oh, we're going to move on to honorable mentions now.
Oh, honorable mentions. Okay. All right. Yep. Who do you want to start, Anthony?
I'll go right ahead. Okay. I had like five films fighting for number 10. A lot of indie films.
Yeah. Mm.
In that fight.
Okay.
Films that didn't make it included Immaculate, the Sydney Sweeney film.
Okay.
That was really good. I have to admit, I'm not a fan of religious horror films. We actually had two good ones this year. Surprisingly,
like a week
but
apart
not in the first
other.
Omen.
Yeah.
But that's not an honorable mention. Eight Eyes, from the director of The Last Drive-In.
Okay.
Released by Vinegar Syndrome Pictures.
Okay.
You got Divini Penny's The Black Mass, which is a very good film. And I'm not into two serial killer films. But she does a great job spotlighting the victims in that film.
Wait, say the title of it one more time.
The Black Mass.
I don't think I've even seen that. So, is that available on streaming?
Yeah, it should be. I think Cleopatra Records has physical media. It takes place around 1978 during the Ted Bundy murders.
Cool. All right.
She focuses the film on the victims and not on Ted Bundy.
Yeah, yeah. That's a different approach. I like that.
And the other one is E.L. Katz's latest film, Azrael, with Samara Weaving.
Okay.
Which is also a very good film as well. But those do not make the top 10 list.
All right. I like that you picked some films that like I wasn't expecting. So that was good.
All right.
Go, Dave.
Dave, your turn.
Okay. Damn, I feel like now I should have gone first because Anthony brought out some obscure films that I hadn't heard of, and I'm about to probably name a bunch of ones that everybody has already seen. All right. I'm having a hard time putting these in order. So I guess my first one, and I've talked about this film probably too much, Speak No Evil with James McAvoy. I really enjoyed it. It just missed my top 10. I actually rewatched it, which I rarely ever do, and I enjoyed it just as much the second time. Heretic is also on my just missed my top 10. Didn't have as much action as I probably would have wanted. It was way more psychological and dialogue heavy, but it was still a really good film. Made me think. I enjoyed that. And then for another one, let's see. I guess Maxine didn't make my top 10, but it was a good film. I enjoyed it more than I think some other people that I know have seen it. Like I was hearing a lot of hate for Maxine, and I think it was just because people didn't really know. They went in thinking it was going to be something else, and I still enjoyed it. So one more. Abigail is also on my just missed the top 10. So I'll drop those four. And there's a bunch more that could probably make that list, too. This year was pretty there's a lot of films that could have made top 10, the bottom of the top 10, and just kind of, like, weren't able to make the cut.
Yeah, like Dave said, you know, Heretic, so that was definitely a film. I think it was a good theater experience film. Also, for me, Maxine, it just didn't hit the way it should have. You know what I mean? Would it be in the closing to the trilogy? You know, Lisa Frankenstein. It was a great film to see in the theater. And Oddity. For me, I've seen a lot of people love this film, and for me, it was just kind of like dry and slow at times. But when it hit, it did have some points to it, but it just didn't hit well for me. And another one is Apartment 7A. That was a great film. But it's just, you know, I think there was so many films that came out this year that kind of just, like, box it out. Right. So if you're going to do a top 10, like I said, like, these films I wouldn't name them, they're not bad films. It's just, like, to take that, you know, 10 spots of, like, greatness, it's hard. But definitely check them out, though.
Now we are getting to the top 10.
Dun, da, da.
Finally. Brandon, you can start us off.
All right. So this is no order at whatsoever, but, you know, I got to go with The Substance. That definitely was, you know, one of the top films of the year. Shout out to Demi Moore winning the Golden Globe, bringing the love back for horror to the award shows. Late Night with the Devil, you know, it was a great film. I have to go with The First Omen. That was a great film because I'm a big fan of the franchise, and seeing it all tie back together was really a cool experience. Alien Romulus, you know, there's a lot of hate on that, but for me, I enjoyed it. Just like Dave said, for me, Abigail ended up making mine just because it was a cool theater experience, and so, you know, that's what it's all about. Never let anyone shit on, you know, whatever films you love or you like, you know what I mean? So it's just like, I think that's a spite. That's a spite. Ranking right there. Long Legs, too. Long Legs got a lot of hate. I was kind of surprised on that, but I understand. I had a good time in the theater with that. But yeah. I saw the TV Glow was a special film, you know what I mean? I think it was cool because it was able to capture so much of, you know, a lot of people's different views and stuff. So it was kind of cool, you know, because me and Dave, once we watch a film, we like to kind of talk about where that film had taken us and stuff like that. So that film, that was a film that, you know, that had done that. And I think the last film that really did that to us was Suspiria. And that there, it's like,
oh yeah, that one was, I remember leaving there and being like, whoa. Yeah.
And Mods from over on Shudder. That was a great film. If you guys haven't seen that, check it out. It's, I think that film was like shot in just like one continuous sequence, like, and it was just like just so fucking crazy. So definitely check that film out. Did I say Immaculate? Did I throw that in there already?
I don't think you said that yet.
You haven't, yeah. I don't think.
Immaculate. I think that was a cool experience too, seeing that in the theater. And I think that was basically it. If not, I'll throw... I saw the TV Glow in there, yeah. But yeah, it's been a crazy year for horror, so it's like, you know, I really can't hate on a lot of films, but I want to hear your top films, Anthony.
Well, I have to let my guest Dave first, then I will.
Okay, all right.
Okay, Dave, you didn't go?
So, no, not yet.
Oh, okay.
I got a lot of the same ones as Brandon on here. So, Nosferatu.
Hmm.
The Substance, Late Night with the Devil, those are probably my top three right there. That was a hard one for me to pick the order in which I would put them. Then followed by, and this is in no order at all, The First Omen. It's been a while since I watched it. It feels like it was like almost last year, but I loved that one when we saw that in the theater. I saw the TV Glow, Long Legs, that I really enjoyed. Strange Darling made my list. Terrifier 3, I think, Brandon, you probably just forgot to put that in there because I'm sure that probably would have made
your
list or honorable mention. Immaculate and Alien Romulus. So a lot of the same ones as Brandon.
Yeah,
I think we both, me and you, Dave, have pretty much the same top three. Nosferatu, The Substance, and Late Night with the Devil. But let me run down my list from 10 to 1 quickly.
Okay.
10, I had Stop Motion, which was on Shudder.
Yeah.
I really liked that film a lot. I really thought the stop motion animation was good. And who would have thought stop motion animation would make a comeback in 2024?
Yeah,
because you had that film in the Primevals, too.
Yep, Primevals, yep.
Which is great to see because...
That was Full Moon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to see that film for, like, ever. Literally.
Yeah,
it's
years.
Like one of those myths.
Full
Moon legend.
Yep.
Plus, the film, stop motion, has great lead performance. Plus, I really liked the screenplay in that film. I thought that was really good. 9 was Alien Rominess. I really liked the fact that Ridley Scott did not direct this film. I think a lot of people kind of who loved this film liked that fact. Because the last two Alien films felt like it was getting too philosophical. And that's not what the Alien films were.
Yeah.
Growing up.
And this is like the exact opposite for me, is like I liked that aspect of the last two films, and it was missing in this one. So after I watched this, I was like, damn, I wanted to hear more about like the origin of man and all that stuff. And it wasn't in there. So
Anthony's about to kick you off the show.
it's just a difference of what we wanted to see from it. That's all.
I think Disney's handled both that property and the Predator property very well.
Oh yeah.
I'm kind of shocked.
Yeah, we got the TV show coming out too on Alien Earth on Hulu. Yeah, so that'd be
and
cool.
And you also got, I think, another Predator movie coming out next year, I think, too, as well.
Yeah.
In 2025, I think.
Okay.
8, Maxine. This would have been higher on my list, but I like this film. I thought it was a really good film, but great performances. Only problem was I thought it was way too predictable.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think if you see the end of X, where you had the scene at the very tail end with that preacher revealing the daughter, there's no way they're not going to do a third film without that preacher. And of course, when you see the snuff video that they sent her, you see guys that look like they're dressed for church. And all of a sudden, yes, my theory's right. They're going that route. Even though you get Kevin...
It's a good detective work on that one. I'll give you that.
Yeah, they should have cast Anthony instead of Kevin Bacon in that film, huh?
Kevin
Bacon's really good in this film.
He was like a real exaggerated character in there. I don't know, Anthony. I think you would have done better.
Yeah, that chase scene would have been 10 out of 10.
It was really a great performance. Next two films are from Canada. Seven, In a Violent Nature.
Okay.
This was a film where I didn't know what to think at the end of this film, literally. I was, like, angry at this film. Then when I kept thinking about it afterwards, with that whole ending where you have this girl running away with this stranger woman, you're waiting for this killer to show up, he never shows up, and you're saying to yourself, what the hell's going on? That's supposed to be our formula. The killer's supposed to come back.
I also, in the film, didn't know what was going on, but that's just because I fell asleep.
Yeah, they're talking about a sequel, so I don't know. Hopefully, I don't know. That film didn't really blow me away. It was too slow. So I think, like, with this film, it was kind of like what Skinamarink did for the year before, where a lot of people, it caused a lot of, rifts between everybody. So, everybody has their own take on it. And I agree with it, and that's the thing. It's great for horror, so for me, I definitely had to skip it because I'm more of the fast action pace of a slasher film. I want to see what's going on with everyone, like, in so much like movement, not just this like slow walking all the time. I can't imagine a film of having follow Michael Myers or Jason around just for like a long periods of time.
Well, the funny thing is, like, they did and like I enjoyed this, but like I saw a late night showing, and that was a huge mistake because I was just at the end of it, I couldn't stay awake, and then I was like, I don't even know how this ended now. But it was like they did like the it was a take on that movie Elephant that they did about the Columbine shootings like ages ago, and they did the same exact thing in that film, yeah, but the thing was, like, you were walking through a school, so it was like there was things to like capture your attention throughout. Mm-hmm. And in this one, there was like just like, I mean, they're beautiful shots, but there's like long, like winded shots of just walking through the woods. So there's nothing to really like captivate you at times. The kills are amazing.
Probably
the best kills.
The yoga scene is probably the kill of the year. Obviously.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I think Fangoria rated that the top kill of the year. I'm almost positive.
Yeah, I think, the fans did, rightfully so.
Yep. Yeah, and it's super, like, creative horror-wise. I mean, it's not the first time that a film like this has been done, like I said. But definitely added something different and, you know, I'm sure it's going to influence a whole slew of new ideas for other films. So it'll be interesting to see. The only thing is, like you said, Brandon, like a sequel, they can't do the same formula.
No.
Yeah, so I don't think they can do the same formula.
Yeah, they have to change it. So it'll be interesting to see what changes they make.
Maybe
I will say, I hopped on the, they had like the Fangoria like community forum. Mm-hmm. And what's the name of the director? Nash? Is that, I forget his first name. But Chris Nash, that's right. Yep. He was talking about the film, or no, was it him or the cinematographer? Somebody from the film was on there talking about it. And it was like really interesting to listen to them talk about making this film and the ideas. I do genuinely like appreciate everything about this film.
Oh, yeah.
It's just hard to watch, I will say.
Yeah, like, it was hard to watch through first time around, but when you sit and you think about it afterwards, that's very inventive. That whole third act was inventive. Mm-hmm. You're sitting there waiting for the killer to come. He never comes. That's just genius.
Because he's already making his way to the sequel.
Probably, because...
You know how long it's going to take him to get there?
I know. Probably still walking to the sequel. But still, that is genius. Seriously, what they did
in
with that film
nature,
and that
takes
ending.
Manhattan.
Yeah, there we go.
Where we had like 20 minutes of just those two women talking.
Yeah.
All right, let's move
and,
on.
And I didn't realize, Anthony, sorry to interrupt you. I didn't realize the woman who picks her up in the car is from one of the Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Yep.
I forget which one, but I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I think that was also cool to do, too, I think.
Yeah.
Mm.
The sixth film is also another Canadian film, and the first of two films that got released in December on my list. It's The Last Video Store. Mm. Now, this film was released by Arrow Video, and it's about this woman who returns VHS tapes to this VHS rental place where nobody goes to, and alongside the tape, she brings a videotape that looks like the Necronomicon. They put it in, and all chaos runs loose in the video
in the
store.
Video store.
Mm.
It's very good.
Cool.
Even one critic said it was like Evil Dead meets Clerks.
Hey, that's a good formula right there. I like that.
Yeah, it had the feel of like an Astron 6 film.
Okay.
Or a Psycho Gorman type film.
Yeah.
It's very definitely cool. Worth checking out. Number 5, Terrifier 3. I think Damien Leone's matured as a director with this film, especially with the Sienna subplot. I like the fact that he doesn't go for none of these hack and slash films, which he could have easily done with Terrifier 3.
Oh, definitely.
But instead, he focuses more on Sienna and her trauma, and Laura Larrera literally stole the film from David Howard Thornton. Film felt like at the end of the film. It felt like her film, not David Howard Thornton's film, for once.
Yeah, you know, it's a great point, Anthony. You start to see the role shifting a little bit as far as where the focus goes. And towards the end of that film, she's definitely the focus piece. It kind of happens a little bit in part two, but definitely in part three, she becomes the main focus at the end.
Yeah, especially with the trauma.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Especially the way that film ends. she's going to be more of a focal point in the next film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to think she's probably the main character of the next film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. And that was the thing, you know, because that's what, when the second film came out, it was cool because me and Dave talked about it, but it was good to see, not see art on the screen so much in the second one and focus on, like, different characters, the family. And so for them to carry that over into the third film definitely played a big role because it started to become like a normal film, like we're saying, like with the Jasons and the Michael Myers films and everything like that. You know, they can't be on the screen so much as a violent nature. And I think that's what happens with those types of films. It kind of like takes away from the storytelling and everything like that. So it's like, if you just had art on the screen, just like as much in the first one, it's like, okay, where do we go? Do we see Terrifier becoming as big as it is now? No, because it had to like play so many different roles and then like take on so many different challenges and test Damien's, you know, creative skills in all different ways. And that's what this third film did. So,
and also screenwriting skills as well, because
definitely
we saw him, I think, mature as a screenwriter in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
with the way he handled the Sienna subplot.
Yeah,
because I rewatched part two the other day, and it was kind of crazy because I hadn't watched part two after seeing part three, and it is like you really do see a lot of growth, and just like quality wise, part three really like takes it up a notch. And I didn't notice that because two was like obviously a step up from one. So each film is just like a progression. It's cool to see.
Yeah, it's very good to see.
Yeah.
It's going somewhere, the story. Mm-hmm. That's the good thing. It's not
the
like
versus evil. Yeah.
It's not like it's stuck. We don't know where the story's going after the end of this film.
Mm-hmm. I can see them doing something like you know, a prequel somewhere down the road or something introducing, like, Art's whole background, because there was a question. He was on a podcast and someone had asked, said, hey, David, can you give us a little background on, like, Art? It's, like, day-to-day living and, like, what was his day-to-day job before he became a slasher? And he was just like, I can't talk about that. Like, you know, so we'll see.
I wonder if we got a little taste of that in three, when he was sitting in that chair, and those two demolition guys.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about a murder house that they were entering.
Oh. Yep.
I wonder if that plays something into Ott's backstory. Oh.
Well, so in that film, like, there's a ton of Easter eggs for other films, right?
Hmm.
There was like all these little references to different horror films, and I thought that Art in that chair was like an Easter egg or like a reference to Black Christmas.
Yeah, I got that a little bit. But when you hear these guys talking about the house,
yeah, that's a good
makes
point.
You wonder if this is starting to tell a backstory of Art the Clown.
Sure.
Mm.
Or it could be nothing.
Yeah,
we don't know what David's doing.
Yeah.
But I got a feeling Terrifier 4 is probably going to be like Godfather Part 2. I really got that feeling.
Mm.
I don't think
it's
going to...
not Part 3.
No, not Part 3. In Part 2 of The Godfather, you had like two separate stories going at once.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
You're going to probably have two separate stories going in Terrifier 4.
Yeah,
because we all know Ott got on that bus at the end of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And Sienna has to go find her cousin now.
Matt, did you see this in the theater or no?
I saw this in the theater.
Okay.
I was glad I saw this in the theater.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love how it pushes everything, but it almost pushed the line for me in one scene, the mall scene, but that's about it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I know everybody was complaining about the beginning of the film. I had no problem with that.
Yeah, they didn't really show much. So
the mall scene, I think, was the big problem I had that almost crossed the line.
Right.
Okay, moving to four, I saw the TV glow.
Ooh.
Nice.
There we go.
This is Jane Schroenberg's follow-up to We're Going to the World's Fair, Now, that film hit my top 10 in 2022.
Okay.
So I was very excited to see this film. And this film did not disappoint at all. I thought it had really good 90s references. I love the cinematography in this film, whether it's in present day or those 90s TV show clips. That you're literally feeling like you're watching Buffy or Are You Afraid of the Dark? Also, I thought adding the music bands in the middle of the film had this Twin Peaks The Return vibe to it as well. There's a lot of things that I think this film draws upon, which is good. I like to see stuff that's inspirational. And you could clearly see this in this film.
Yeah, it was a special film, you know what I mean? Because like I said, when I was in the theater, it kind of just made me feel like, you know, I haven't, like a film hasn't done this to me or made me feel this way in a long time, just like watching it and just hitting me and like, you know what I mean? Just had so many thoughts and everything going through my head at the time. I think also, I think it was also a challenging year for myself. And I think that a lot of these things that were in the film kind of like hit it on the nail for me. Like I said to Dave before, like, you know, from the main audience of everything, when some people watch this film, it's kind of going through like crossing over to transgender or anything like that. But I feel as though if you have a lot of stuff going on in your own life, it can definitely kind of walk that line and kind of like hit the same way. Because I think that like even at the end of the film where you see the main character kind of like go into that, like transition over after the theater closed, he went into and worked at the Kids Fun World, and you see him get stuck at this job where he was just like time was passing by. You know what I mean? And so he began to get older. And I think that for myself, it's like I'm in the middle of trying to, like, get out of my job. And I don't want to get into the position where I'm at my job where I'm too at an age like that where you just start to, like, think, like, what the hell? Did my life just pass by this long and I'm still doing this bullshit? You know what I mean? And I think that's what hit me, like, so different ways. And it brought me back, like you said, Anthony, being in the 90s watching the 90s, like the shows like Nickelodeon, Are You Afraid of the Dark, all that, you know, TGIF, just those points in life, you know what I mean? It definitely brings you back, and you can see where the vision of the director and the writer, what they were trying to do with this project, and it definitely hit on all aspects on what they were trying to do. And not a lot of people were going to feel the same way, but, you know, I think a lot of people were let down from it, but I think that, like, if you have a lot going on, it will hit you different ways. So
I think for a film like this, and maybe a few films this year, a lot of it's about mismarketing. I think if, like, you went into it thinking you're getting, like, this straightforward horror film, you're probably very upset when you leave. But if you go in thinking, you know, this is this artistic, you know, creative, I don't know how you would, like, horror-ish, horror-adjacent film, then, you know, I think you can embrace it a little easier. Especially if you knew her previous work, then you're probably going to have an easier time, like, understanding what you're getting into.
Yeah, that's what I did with this film, obviously, because I did see her last film after hearing a lot of good things about it.
Yeah, exactly. I went into We're All Going to the World's Fair, and I was kind of, like, kind of lost. Like, this isn't a horror movie. But it's like, all right, now, like, you understand, you know, what they're trying to do. So.
Yeah, it's more psychological.
Oh, yeah.
Right, right.
That film literally focused on the girl's state of mind throughout the entire film.
Yeah. Yep. Right, and in many ways, I think, like, I saw the TV go as kind of similar. Like, just, like you said, psychological thriller, I guess you would say, in some ways.
Yeah.
So.
My top three, I think, is probably Dave's top three.
Okay.
Three, Late Night with the Devil. Yep. It was number one until December. Great film, great lead performance. Loved the look of the film. It had that 70s type feel. I like how it blends in that 70s late night show type feel with the folks documentary style.
Yeah. Mm.
Which is really good with all the black and white scenes.
And I love the transitions, like when they go to commercial, the little logos that come up, and just like they did such a cool job with so many different like details to the film, like the graphics for the show and all that stuff. I really the color schemes, everything about it was like very cool and authentic. So
and the costumes too.
Oh yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
To the substance.
Yep. Yep.
It's just a great film, literally. This is a film that Universal Pictures had, and they just dropped the ball because they wouldn't agree to the director's edit, which I don't get. Seriously. Universal Pictures, this film failed. They had a backup plan for this film. It's called Peacock. Why did they sell this film? Because they could be probably reaping the benefits on home media for this film. Mm-hmm. Given the fact that the buzz on this film is so there.
Mm-hmm.
But again, Hollywood has to be Hollywood.
Yeah.
But it's a good thing, though.
It can be a good thing and a bad thing. And in this case, it was a bad thing because they saw no potential in this film after giving the director final edit control.
Yeah, but think about this, though. Since they dropped the ball so hard, going forward, they are going to be way more open-minded to projects like this. Because I'm sure they looked at this film and they said, the audience isn't going to want to see this. This is too weird. This is like how many times do films that we love get dismissed by bigger, you know, budget agencies and stuff like that? So I feel like this is actually a good experience to have because it's going to open people's eyes and get them to like be more open-minded with the types of films people want to see.
I hope so. I really do. Plus it has great performances too.
Oh yeah, definitely. From
Demi Moore, Margaret Qualley, and Dennis Quaid. In another slimy character role.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a couple of slimy... We had at least three slimy characters this year. We had the Dennis Quaid character in The Substance, Kevin Bacon and Maxine, Dan Stevens and Abigail.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
That's a slimy cop.
Yeah. Mm.
We all know what happened. He tried to thought he can be in control.
The year of the slime ball, I guess.
Yeah,
right? Slime balls. Yeah.
But slime you got perfect actors playing them.
Definitely.
Seriously, that's a good thing. And you probably can add Giancarlo Esposito for Maxine too.
Mm.
He kind of comes off as slate shady.
Yeah.
Especially with that scene where he crushes Kevin Bacon. Yeah, I think that you can also add him to the list.
I'm trying to remember. I just saw Dan Stevens in something yesterday, and I was like, I didn't realize it was him at first, but I'm like, he's pretty like versatile. He's a good actor, that guy.
Yeah, he is.
I'm trying to remember what movie that was I caught him in, but yeah, he's kind of underrated, I feel like.
Yeah, he's very underrated. He was great in that. He was great in a film called The Guest.
Yeah, The Guest.
Oh, that's him.
That was good.
All right. Is he the main... I haven't seen The Guest, but I know the movie poster. Is he the main guy?
He's the main guy in that film, yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that was him.
Yeah, the Adam Wingard film. When Adam Wingard did really good films, did not sell himself to the Godzilla films. Please, he needs to get out of that franchise. Badly. Simon Barrett, at least, is doing good stuff.
I mean, you know, though, like, for what it's worth, there is, like, a whole population of people that like that Godzilla like ex King Kong like world and stuff like that. It's not for me. That's too like, I don't know. It's getting too crazy, but there are people that like it. So I guess some people want to see it.
I'd rather follow the Godzilla minus one model on the Godzilla films.
Yeah.
Those are the interesting films.
I tried watching that Godzilla and King Kong one, the last one, and
yeah,
like after 20 minutes, I was like, nah.
Yeah, it feels like it's a prerequisite because I have
that. Yeah, it's got good actors in it, so it's not that. Like, Rebecca Hall's great. And
it's just scripts. Like,
yeah.
It comes down to scripts.
Yep.
And, of course, number one, no surprise, Nosferatu. What can you say? Great cast, great cinematography. Robert Eggers, I really think, why isn't he being talked as a master of horror? I don't get that. Seriously.
Well, I think this film is definitely going to start that that conversation a bit.
He should.
Getting this one under his belt, now he's got, what has he got, at least four films that are like considered to be, you know,
great films,
really great films. So I didn't see The Northman. I feel like
it's very good.
All right. Yeah. So I kind of brushed it off. I didn't really hear anything about it, but now that Nosferatu's out, everybody's talking about his previous films. I'm like, I think I got to go and check this out.
Well, if you like The Lighthouse and The Witch, I think you'll probably like those films, that film.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just,
I do love Willem Dafoe's like character is like sort of like his Lighthouse character in some ways too. Like he and I guess they really like working with each other, Eggers and Dafoe. So
that's why he's in Nosferatu.
Yeah, I feel like he'll probably be in future films for him as well. So
yeah, but plus Willem Dafoe worked on one of the older Nosferatu films. So
yeah.
Plus the cast in the film was great too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Bill Sarsgaard, Lily Rose Depp, Nicholas Hoyt.
That mustache.
Aaron Taylor Johnson, Emma Corish, Ralph Innes.
Mm.
Yeah, they had some great names. Well
and, of
performed.
Course, Willem Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe. I was reading the Fangoria article about Nosferatu, and I thought it was cool. Eggers had this like experience when he was a kid watching the original 1922 version on VHS, and he talks about how like the quality of the VHS actually played more into what made it creepy. And I just thought that was like something so relatable for all of us. Like, there's so many films that we watched when we were younger, and they were probably more creepy to us because we were watching them on like low quality VHS versus now like Blu-ray is great, but it, like seeing, there's nothing like seeing something in like that old VHS style, you know?
Yeah.
So.
That's why you have to check out the last video store.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
You have to check that out. That's, if you like the VHS, you'll love that film.
Mm. Awesome. Now, had you guys seen the Werner Herzog Nosferatu?
Was that the
70 something?
No.
I've seen bits and pieces of it. I haven't really watched the full thing on completion.
Okay.
So I
haven't either, and I was just curious because I know like this film actually follows the 1922 version pretty well. Like I've been seeing a lot of people like comparing certain scenes and stuff like that, which I thought was pretty cool. And I was wondering if that 1970s version also was kind of like followed it, or if it was kind of its own thing. So I wasn't sure.
Yeah. The original, like, you know, the black and white one. But now, like, if you try to go watch it now, like on Tubi or something, they have it in color. So it kind of looks a little weird. It takes away that whole feel from it. I'd rather watch it in the black and white.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's like sepia.
You probably can find it on Blu-ray or something.
Didn't Jobot play it a few years last year?
I'm not sure.
He might have.
I feel like he did. He did two black and white films. I thought he did that the same day he did Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So I could be totally wrong about that, but
if it is, I might go back and check that out.
Hmm.
Because I do want to see the original one.
So, Anthony, you had some good picks, man. I'm impressed. And you threw out a couple that I hadn't seen, so I got to go back and watch.
Of course. I'm always the obscure guy.
Now, Anthony, did you see Strange Darling?
No, I did not, unfortunately.
Ooh. All right. That's one that we've been telling everybody, definitely check it out. It was, we feel like it was really slept on, and just a lot of people just didn't really hear about it. So, like, we got the chance to see it in the theater, and, you know, pretty much anybody that was there with us that time or we've talked to after that seen it has kind of all been in agreement that that was definitely one of the better slept-on films of the year.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I can see. I can take that out, but that's the thing. It's like, you know, it's hard because it's like that line. Like, is this horror or is this like action or is this like what is this? So it's like, you know what I mean. I think that that's what bumps it out of the way. But I think it's overall, it's like a really great piece of cinema. And so you know, it's hard to like however you place the films because you look at it. Even The Substance just won a Golden Globe Award for best musical. Comedy. Like, what is that about?
Right. I feel like they just didn't want to, like, acknowledge that it's horror.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. It's, like, so hard now. Like, how do you place films? Like, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
I can understand how they put The Substance in the Golden Globes for comedy. Because there was nothing comedic about that film.
Yeah.
Just that final scene. Seeing the when she's on the stars and blah blah. Blah. That was the only,
the final scene that probably scared Universal Pictures away from the film.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it was just that scene, or who knows, even like her in the kitchen when she's like cooking up all the food.
Because
and stuff.
I heard they wanted a different ending to the film, so it's probably that
I'm
scene
sure.
where blood was going all over the place.
Yeah,
it's a wild film.
It is. And that's what type of horror films I like.
Yeah.
Films that take risks. I'd rather see a bad film that takes risks than a cookie cutter film that's average.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's a great point. And a lot of the films, you know, even if we didn't, if they didn't hit the mark for us, there's like that, like Maxine, for example. I don't think it like met the expectation we all had, but I think most of us who appreciate film and can appreciate, like you said, Anthony, like taking risks, can appreciate the way that, like, clearly that was what he wanted us to see, right?
Yeah.
He made the film he wanted to make, and I appreciate that. If it hits the mark for us, great. If it doesn't, then, you know, at least it's a good effort, and we got it was another film to enjoy. But, yeah, you're exactly right. It's when they don't bother taking risks. Like The Strangers, Chapter 1, that's when I think you have a problem, right? And that's when we all come back and we're like, that was trash, or like, that was boring. And it's because it didn't take any risks. It literally did the same formula, like, for no reason. Like, what was the point of doing that?
That's going to be the interesting question of this year. Is the other two films going to be trash like the first one?
I know, Brandon, you've talked about that, like, kind of staying hopeful, and we'll see.
I'm, like, waiting to see what the other two films look like before I see the first one.
Yeah, the main thing is, that's what I was saying, that's going to be, I think it's coming out soon, the second part to it. Let's see, let's check the release date.
And that's the thing with this Chapter 1, it's like, it's not that it's bad, it's pointless.
I heard it was like rolling two films into one.
Yeah. Well, they filmed all three of the films at the same time, so we're not getting this one.
Why you would do that, I don't know.
Yeah, we're not getting this until... It was scheduled for 2024 in the fall, but they pushed it back, so it was delayed. I don't know, so we might get this in January, but I haven't seen anything. And then
I don't think it's coming out in January this month.
Yeah, and it was pushed back from January. Now I think we're getting it in April.
Oh, that's nice.
Geez.
Yeah, it's been moved around like so many times.
That's
so.
Not a great sign.
No.
It's supposed to come out like right after the first one.
And
have it, like.
This is coming from a studio that had a terrible year.
Yeah.
Lionsgate.
Oh, Brandon, worst film of the year, was The Crow better than Night Swim?
I would say it was, you know what I mean, because the way that everything was put together, it was better than, it was. The Crow was definitely better, but it just, overall, it was a bad movie, but I think at the end of the day, The Crow brings back the kids that are now in today's, you know,
yeah,
fans of horror, brings them back to the original, you know what I mean, say they can check that out, you know what I mean, so I think that's what that film did. It wasn't great, but I gave it 3 stars.
Better than nice one.
Oh yeah, definitely. Have you seen The Crow?
No, I have not seen it. I kind of like avoided it because I really don't think we needed a remake of The Crow. Seriously.
No, we didn't need it.
Just let it be.
Yeah,
especially with like, you know, what happened, you know, to him in the first, like, during the filming and everything like that. Mm-hmm. It's like, you could just leave that alone.
Yeah.
And they already had other films that they made with different, like, Eddie Furlong was the Crow in one. It's like, nobody really wanted to see a different person as the Crow, so just leave it, you know?
Yeah, it should have been left alone.
Yeah. See, but that's the thing, Anthony. Big time studios want this, so it was good that, you know, that studio dropped the substance and was able to give it to another studio to kind of, like, do this because it's going to teach everybody a lesson. Like, okay, fine, nobody wants this same shit over and over. Give us something new. Give us something different. And then they won the awards and everything. And now, like Dave said, this upcoming year, it's going to be so much different. 2026 is going to have a different approach to horror. You know what I mean? Because it's going to be like, you're going to see so much new stuff that we've been having on the independent field, on the mainstream. You know what I mean? So, because everyone's going to say, all right, we'll take the chance now. So,
I think Terrifier 3 kind of changed that game, I would think.
Oh, yeah, it definitely did.
Yep.
After the way it tore up the box office.
Yeah.
But also, I really think, whoever thought movie had a streaming service. I never knew movie released films.
Oh, I know.
Yep.
Yeah. And they got linked to Fangoria at some point because Fangoria was helping to promote that movie trial for people to check out The Substance. Yeah. So, yeah, that was an interesting little
thing that
happened.
Usually I knew them, they were an entertainment site. But I never knew they released films or had a streaming site.
It was cool. You know, did you watch The Substance on Mubi?
Yes.
Or did you? Okay. Yeah, so did you take advantage of watching, like, all the other films that they had? Like, they had, like, the Shining documentary. I was able to check that out on there, and that was really cool. So if you haven't checked that out yet, definitely add that to your list.
I kind of watched the documentary Witches.
Okay.
It was, like, depicting mental disabilities with the movies, witches movies that one the director of the film was going through.
Oh, cool.
Which was an interesting documentary.
Mm.
Looking maybe at, also caught a David Cronenberg short film on there too as well.
Oh, nice.
Which name escapes me.
Yeah.
At least they're willing to put out independent horror, which is good.
Yep.
Probably stuff you won't see on Shudder or Peacock or Paramount Plus.
See, you know what's crazy is, like, horror fans today are spoiled. Yeah. We have so many different platforms now that are, like, putting out films that we want to see or we didn't know we wanted to see. And, like, our options are almost overwhelming how many movies we have to choose from. Do you remember, like, when Shudder first came out and it had, like, 12 films on its roster and it was like, I don't know if I want to buy that yet. And I remember, like, when we first signed up for it, we were like, oh, let's give it a chance for a little bit. And then suddenly we just got, like, flooded. But, like, prior to that, what did we have to choose from? You know, it's like you just, the big budget horror movies on DVD if you went to rent them or something like that. But, now it's like we just have everything. We got Screambox, we got Shudder, Mubi, Tubi,
Arrow has a streaming site, Full Moon has a streaming site, Troma has a streaming site.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Take it over.
Yeah, and it's awesome because, like, I mean, obviously we talked a lot about, like, big budget, you know, theater films here, but, like, what you did, Anthony, was you brought in some films that you had seen not on the big screen, and, like, there's so many people out there that can probably make top 10 lists that would look totally different than ours right now, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I usually try to find films, whether it's through various websites or through Indiegogo campaigns or I found directors through that way.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
You've got some interesting stuff like the Bloody Summer Camp film.
Joe Bob.
Yeah, that director I actually discovered when I was at a convention in Virginia. He also has another film coming out, Dave Kerr, called The Slasher Nurse, this year.
Okay.
Who's another one? Paul Ragsdale, who did a movie called Murder Size, is already starting, should have a new film this year called Only Fangs.
Oh, yeah, AMP Productions.
Yeah, AMP Productions.
Yeah.
You got Neil, who did his own film, I think. The Once in Future Smash and End Zone 2.
Okay.
I know he teamed up with a couple of directors to do that. You got a lot of people making films.
Yeah.
You just got to find them.
Yep. 2005. Is looking like a crazy year, man.
2025, it's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, what is your most anticipated film of the year?
Ah, man, that's hard to kind of like crack down on one because we have so many films coming out. I'll just rattle off a few. Companion looks good, you know, so... Dark Match, which is coming out January 31st on Shudder. That's a wrestling film, so I think that you're going to enjoy
it. Yeah, I'm going to see that.
Chris
that
Jericho.
Might be reviewed on this episode.
Hard Eyes. We got Hard Eyes coming out. You seen the trailer to that?
Yeah, I've seen that. That looks interesting.
But another one is The Monkey.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
That one it looks like... It almost looks like they're going with kind of like a dark humor tone to it. So the trailer is interesting. So I'm not even really sure fully what to expect from that film. I never read the Stephen King story. So I'm going to go in completely blind to that. But that definitely looks like it's going to be good.
But something that I had seen, like a trailer that I had seen when I was at New York Comic Con, for Shudder, we're going to get Ash. That's going to release on March 21st. That's created by Flying Lotus. So,
I've heard about that.
Yeah, so me and Dave have been a big fan of Flying Lotus's music for years, and to watch him cross over into films, that has been very special. He's been killing it with the VHS 99 segment. Yeah. It was kind of like the Legends of the Hidden Temple one. So,
that was one of the better ones in that film.
Yeah.
Bonkers. Yeah.
So, we're getting ready to see him back on the screen again soon. So, can't wait to check that out. What do you got, Dave?
So, only two that you didn't mention on there that I wanted to mention. 28 Years Later, I'm really excited for. The first one is like one of my all time favorite zombie films. And, you know, this one, I'm just really excited to see with bringing back the original director and writer, seeing what they can give us. And then Clown in a Cornfield, I think, is exciting when that comes down. I think that's later in the year, if I remember correctly, but that's going to be cool. So
May 9th,
all right.
Yeah.
And then Wolfman, of course, but that will already be out by time.
What about I Know What You Did Last Summer? The reboot.
I mean... It's something. I mean, I'm not like super excited, but it's cool, I guess. You know, it's like it'll be cool to see what they do.
But did you know that The Weeknd's going to be releasing a horror movie too?
Yes, I heard about that. I know nothing about like when.
Well, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, he's a big horror fan.
From like his albums.
I think so. It's something like
yeah. Some of his music videos. I know for one of his big album, it had like a creepy video. One
yeah,
of
he had, I know he had like the he had like the mask for a while, and when he was doing like the like when he did the Super Bowl halftime show,
everybody
came out with like that weird mask on their face.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested to see what he'll do.
Yeah, he's a big horror fan, so we'll see.
Haunt at
Universal Studios,
and they were talking about maybe even him having another one at some point. So, yeah, good for him.
Mm.
Okay.
Again, something else, all The Bride. It's like a Bride of Frankenstein type film. So we'll see that. That's September 26th. It's just called The Bride.
Okay.
Once, definitely 28 years later, I've been like wanting to see this sequel for like years.
Mm.
When it was like originally 28 months later. Yeah. I like the fact that they're going back to the series.
Yeah.
And just going 28 years, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
Or he has a creepy first trailer.
Yeah. What do you think about seeing Cillian Murphy as a zombie, maybe?
Mm.
I don't buy it. I don't think that's it. I don't think he is a zombie.
Yeah.
I don't think they would have given that away.
Mm-mm. Yeah, that is. I mean, that you're right. That is a pretty big like thing to put in the trailer.
That would be stupid to give that away.
Yeah,
that
I don't
would
think
be
so.
Stupid. Another film I don't think got mentioned that might come out this year, Predator Badlands.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Dan Trachtenberg's directing, who directed the excellent Prey film,
mm-hmm.
which brought the Predator back on the map after that disastrous one with the stupid kid.
Nah.
Ugh.
I think that's going to release November 7th.
I remember watching that film as my last film at Patriot Cinema before that got shut down due to health violations.
Was it health violations?
I think it was.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was health violations. But it was not a good theater to be in, trust me.
No.
It was getting cold in there.
If you picture a grindhouse theater, that felt like a grindhouse theater.
Yeah, we would go. We would go watch films there. I missed that place, though.
That's where we saw Suspiria, wasn't it?
Yeah, we seen that there.
Yeah.
But it didn't seem like they wanted to keep the place.
Nah. It's hard when you're selling tickets for $2, you know what I mean?
I know, but still. It felt like a bad place. It felt like something you'd be in a grindhouse there in New York City.
Bad things were happening there.
That's the thing, though. I was saying that to Dave the other day. Like, look at the screen and the size of the theater. Like, a lot of small towns in different states have that type of theater. They're not able to have like the big theaters like us. They don't have the big showcase cinemas, IMAX screens. Like they just have those cinemas like that, like Patriot's Place. So
yeah,
you know,
it's also sad we lost the showcase too in the area.
Yeah, we did.
Now it becomes a Market Basket.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Crazy
Market Basket.
It's crazy. I would thought they would try to relocate, but I guess not.
We'll see, because we'll see what they're going to do. I don't know. Hopefully they do. We get a new theater.
Yeah,
I think that's something they have to iron out, because I think there's 2 years left on that contract, because Paramount had bought Showcase out. So we will see what they choose to do with that. So
yeah,
I think the brand's staying. It's just the theater closed, because they sold the property.
Yeah, the property. So they closed that one down in Seekonk, and there was another one in Mass, because the team behind Forest Hills, the film, they had their last showing at another showcase in Mass. So basically, I think they're just closing all their chains that aren't really doing well with ticket sales. So Paramount has now owned Showcase, so we'll see.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. Paramount Pictures owns it.
Yeah, so we'll see in 2 years if they'll do something different. But right now, I think they're just sticking with the locations.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah.
Given the climate of theaters these days.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just wish we could go back to the days where theaters, everybody went to theaters, and everybody went to video stores.
Yeah. And I tell Dave all the time, man, and my kids, too, when we go to the theater, like the side concession stands, I'm like, I miss when they used to be open because now they're just like a display. My kids are like, what is this? Why is this over here like this? I'm like, it used to be so busy. The theater used to be so busy back in the day. You had both of those side concessions going on that were down in the hallways. You know what I mean? You could just pop right out, grab some popcorn, go right back into the movie instead of going to the main lobby all the time, so... I don't know. Just miss those experiences, man, being a kid.
Yeah.
A packed show all the time. Now we're going to get packed shows on certain releases like Wicked, Barbie, and the last one we went to was Terrifier 3 opening night.
Yeah.
Other than that, you don't really see that. See about like 4 or 5 people in the theater.
Shit.
Like Independence Day when that came out or like the Godzilla with Matthew Broderick. Like I'll never forget those experiences. Having us in the fucking front row. by the end, your neck is like killing, but you wanted to be there, so.
Yeah,
those are the good old days.
That's for sure.
I think streaming is killing.
Oh, yeah. People want to watch from home now. So. Yeah.
It is. And it's everything.
The thing I don't like about streaming is you have to pay $20 or $25 to watch the film.
Mm.
Yeah,
because by the time you pay $20, you might as well buy the film for $25.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's so hard. Like you said, if they made it
like a second run thing, like the good old days, maybe like say $10-$15. That's doable.
Yeah. The companies want their money fast.
Yeah, they want charge
transition. You know, that's why
next
it's like
amount.
That's why it's like if a movie comes out, try to make sure you see it in theaters that week or the week after because it's not guaranteed it's going to be there unless it's a big name film. So, because we have so many big movies coming out this year too, so who knows? So you got to get out there and get in there. Just like we got Peter Pan Neverland.
Yeah.
Nightmares. That's in theaters for 3 nights tonight.
Another
what was that?
Fairy tale.
What was that?
I cannot stand these fairy tales.
You don't want to see these twisted tales?
I don't want to see these public domain films.
I thought you were a big fan of that. I thought you would be a big fan. That's independent at its best.
It's right independent, there. But it's, I think, lazy filmmaking.
Ah, that's smart marketing.
No, it's not marketing, but it's lazy filmaking.
It's not
original.
Like this one, I think even the Winnie the Pooh, like, I do give them credit. Like, they're creating their own, like, takes on these. Like, the storyline is different. So, like, I feel like this Peter Pan one, it sounds like their like, storyline for this is going to be something really interesting from what I'm understanding. We haven't seen it yet. But, I don't know. I'm going to go in open-minded. I'm kind of looking forward to it.
If I see it, I'll just wait till it ends up on Peacock. You know it's going to end up on Peacock sometime during the year.
Yeah, probably in a couple months.
Yeah, probably in a couple months.
Do you have a promotion deal with Peacock?
Yeah.
No. That's where it seems like all these public domain films that these new horror films are based of end up eventually in about 5 months.
This is Jagged Edge Productions, though. They kind of started this game, so we'll see what they do.
I wonder, like, you might have missed their key point, like, sales. Like, did you buy a lot of, like, horror films, like, from Walmart, like the DVDs that they had on the shelves? Because they started off there.
I'm more like a Blu-ray guy.
Yeah, yeah, I know, but I'm saying, like, before, like, the, all the horror movies at Walmart, that's where Jagged Edge Films would always have their films, mm-hmm. like, distribute out of a lot of the places, and then so then they just caught on to getting this, these, you know, public domain films, because they've been around for a long time. It's not just, like, they've just been doing it with these films right here.
Yes. Just, to me, it lacks creativity. I like people who use original vision, not trying to make a quick buck off of these stuff from the 1900s that are in the public domain.
Anthony, you better keep up the same energy when Streamboat comes out, or Screamboat, or whatever it is.
I may end up being forced to watch that.
The Popeye movie?
Oh, God. Why did they need to do a Popeye movie? That I don't know.
David Howard Thornton just released a photo on his Instagram today of him as
I saw that.
Steamboat Willie. Yeah.
Mm.
That different. I might go see because I love David Howard Thornton.
See? That's a little different for you switching up now. I heard David Howard Thornton, Peter Pan. He's in the Peter Pan movie too. He's one of the Lost Boys.
He's
one of the Lost Boys.
That's a British film.
Yeah.
Hey, he wants to play Joker. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we all know he wants to play Joker. That we all know.
We'll see.
You probably can play a better Joker than the one we got this past
Joaquin?
Year.
You think he's better than Joaquin Phoenix?
Probably, because, well, I didn't even bother going to see the second one because everybody hated it.
It wasn't bad.
I watched most of it the other night, actually, and definitely can understand why people didn't like it, but I also think it's a very interesting take. I didn't hate it. Mm-hmm. I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it. I thought it was like, I was like, wow, this is an interesting story he's trying to tell us here.
Yeah.
Too much singing, though. Come on.
We're getting way off topic now.
Yeah.
We gotta wrap this up. We'll be here for another couple of hours.
See, that's what happens when we get going, man. Sorry.
That's fine. This is like the only show of the year where it's the longest show on my podcast. Yep. Well, Brandon and Dave, how can everybody find PVD Horror on the web?
You can find us at PVD Horror. At PVD Horror on all social medias.
Everything.
What else, Dave?
If you want to email us for some strange reason, pvdhorror401@gmail.com. But otherwise, yeah, find us. We're on YouTube. We're on all the podcast platforms. Like Brandon said, all the social media. We're probably most heavy on Instagram, but we dabble in a little bit of everything. TikTok, X, Blue Sky. Threads.
Facebook,
everything.
Pay attention to Facebook for the monthly screening events or our markets. You know, definitely, you know. So, yeah, definitely if you want to hit us up. If you're a vendor, you're looking to sell some of your cool artistic merch or anything like that, hit us up because we do cool markets, you know what I mean? Not to toot our own horn like Steamboat Willie out here, but we're having a good run with markets, you know, a lot of fun.
Markets have been getting really big, so. And if you're a filmmaker and you want to, like, come to the markets and talk about your films with people, let us know.
Mm-hmm.
Authors. We're trying to, authors, everybody. So Facebook is kind of like our least favorite platform, but it is the easiest and best place to announce events. So definitely follow us either at PVD Horror on there or Jerzen Bornies is our other Facebook page. That's like the main page, and then the PVD Horror is the business page. So find us on any of those.
And Dave's phone number is.
Also, definitely check out the podcast as they bring on some really good guests as well.
Thank you.
It's not just local horror talk. They bring on some guests. I know they brought Charles Band on once.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, we've been really lucky. We've had some great guests spanning from, like, we had Tony Todd, rest in peace, back in the day, Amelia Kincaid, Charles Band, like you said. We had Lloyd Kaufman. Mark Torgel, I actually saw, is going to be appearing some. Oh, he's going to be at that Dead of Winter thing in Worcester. So, yeah, he played Melvin in Melvin the Mop Boy in Toxic Avenger. And, but then we have a ton of indie and upcoming directors, writers, all that stuff. We recently had Ryan Kruger, who did the new Street Trash movie, if people have checked that out. So, yeah, we've had a lot of great guests. So that's been cool.
So there's a reason to check out their podcast. Right.
Thank
there.
You. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate you inviting us on, you know, because when we connected over at the Providence, Rhode Island Comic Con, I was like, hey, man, when are you going to let us on? And you stuck to your word. You got us on for the best of 2024, and we appreciate that.
I always like to have different people on this show every year.
Yeah.
It's just I can't have the same people on every year. It gets redundant. It's about helping promote other people as well in the podcast community. And I want to thank you, Brandon and David, for coming on to the show.
Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you.
And you're welcome, and have a good day.
Me too.
Every day there's a family struggling with hospital bills to care for their sick child who is fighting an illness. There's a woman who is fighting breast cancer and is having trouble making ends meet while paying for their treatment. And there are burn victims that are going through treatments to heal their deep wounds. There is a charity in the horror community that helps these people. Scares That Care is an organization that helps families deal with the bills for their child. They help women get the treatment they need to fight breast cancer, and they help people who are dealing with severe burns get the help they need to heal. Scares That Care is a 100% volunteer organization and 501c3 nonprofit charity that is dedicated to helping these people in fighting real monsters. To find out more information or to donate to Scares That Care, you can go to www.scaresthatcare.org. Every donation helps Scares That Care fight real monsters. What's Anthony T. watching? Since we are now done with 2024 on the podcast, we can move to 2025 in the films at hand in 2025. Case in point, the first film that will go wire to wire with every other film that I see this year. It'll be a film that was recently released on Screambox. And released by Scream Team Release, and they've been one of my go-to labels. So, hopefully, it's not a disaster like the first film from last year. Because that was a disaster. I think it was Destroy All Monsters. It was on Shudder. That was such a disaster. But anyway, the film is called Cannibal Comedian. That's right, we have a film titled Cannibal Comedian. I know. Never thought I would see a film titled that, or let alone watch a film titled Cannibal Comedian. Because I am not into cannibal films. Seriously. Literally. If it wasn't for the fact that Scream Team Releasing was releasing this film, and the fact that this film has played at some major horror film festivals before its release, I wouldn't be reviewing it here, let alone seeing it. Anyway, here's the synopsis for the film. A psychopathic cannibal, fed up with the lack of ambition, takes a stab at stand-up comedy in an attempt to chase both his dreams and his victims. Okay, that's such a weird premise, but I'll buy into it because, well, it's being released by Scream Team Releasing. And they have not let me down yet on any of the releases they've released. So anyway, this film sounds like Texas Chainsaw Massacre meets stand-up comedy. Okay. Now, here's my thoughts on this, because this is a weird premise. Seriously. Not the weirdest in the world, but it's up there. I like how this film really starts off with this gritty picture look and title intro, because that, like, the feel of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original. And I know this film is trying to be one of those Texas Chainsaw Massacre knockoffs with twisted humor in it. And there's nothing wrong with that. Seriously. So, I was happy the opening scene was good. Seriously. Because I got into this film. And when I can get into a film, chances are I'll probably like it. And I did with Cannibal Comedian, because one of the things I really enjoyed about this film was the twisted humor in the film. The fact that it worked so well here. I like how director and writer Sheen Hyatt does a very good job with the way he handles the twisted humor in this film, along with his co-writer Stephen Ward, as they both did a really good job in making the screenplay very good. I like the fact that this film had some really good humor to it, as it kept me interested in the film. It also really does a good job going into the character's twisted state of mind, as he's pretty much a demented, obsessed killer with dreams of being a Hollywood stand-up comedian. Like I said in the synopsis. Seriously. It's just so weird to have that type of slasher film where you have your slasher also having dreams of being a celebrity as well. Which is very weird. Hollis also really does a good job with his direction. And the way he makes his character very interesting. As he really does a very good job in making sure that the character on screen had the feel of a different type of serial killer you would see in these cannibal films. As this is basically a film that has to balance both the horror aspects and the comedic aspects. And I kind of enjoyed both of them, as he did it very well here, both in his direction and in co-writing the screenplay. He also manages to direct the performances very well here. So I really enjoyed the performances in this film. I know they could be weird, but it was a good kind of weird where it just provided some humor. It also provided some shocking moments in the film as well. There were like two favorite scenes in this film that I really liked. The opening sequence, obviously, and the opening scene, and the sequence where he gets heckled by a guy on stage. And that's when you really go into this guy's psychotic mind, as you're seeing what he's thinking at the moment. I kind of like how it, in those stand-up comedy scenes, it also tries to go into both the comedy aspect and the main character's state of mind. I thought that was a very interesting way into developing the character as a whole. How it's also does a very good job in the way he directs his actors here, as I thought there was some very good chemistry here, especially from the two leads in this film, Aaron Prague and Austin Judd. Both of them had very good chemistry with each other, as both of them were very good in this film. As I really enjoyed the characters, as it made it a very interesting film. Also loved the ending to this film, too, which I won't giveaway. But anyway, I really highly implore you to see Cannibal Comedian. It's on Screambox, and you can get it on ScreamTeamReleasing.com. As cannibals and serial killers are using a tough genre for me to watch, but Howlett does a very good job with both the horror and the comedy here, as everything worked, plus the lead performances really made this film very good. I wouldn't definitely mind seeing a sequel to this. Seriously. Now time for the all-important question. Can this film go wire to wire with every other film I see? Probably not. It probably is not going to be in my top 10 films of the year. But it's still a very good film. It was a lot better than last year's first film. That's for sure. As I really highly recommend you check this film out. As Cannibal Comedian is a very entertaining film, that you will like if you are a fan of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre or stand-up comedians in general. 4 stars. Next episode, I will be talking about the passing of Tony Todd and David Lynch. Yes, I know. I haven't gotten to those two yet, but I do have things I need to get off my chest because those two guys are icons of the horror genre. Seriously. Tony Todd for Final Destination and Candyman. David Lynch for various films like Eraserhead, Twin Peaks, Lost Highway. There's a number of films that you could probably put under horror for David Lynch. And quite frankly, those are like two of my favorite people in the horror genre. So I will talk about them next episode. I will also catch up on the news, as there's been a lot of news lately. If you want to hear my thoughts on some of the news, go to facebook.com/thehorrordevilmusic in horror, as you'll get my thoughts on music, horror news. You also get the Horror Devil's Top 30 playlist every weekend. The Horror Devil's Hard Rock and Metal Chamber, which happens every 2 weeks on a Thursday. So check that out. Go over to facebook.com/thehorrordevilmusichorror to check out all the news and all the playlists. That's where all the stuff is dropping on my thoughts on everything. So if you don't want to wait for my thoughts on horror news, like the Facebook page and you'll get my thoughts instantly, as I usually do horror news twice a week on that page. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe to this episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and other podcast providers. With that, I want to thank you for listening to this podcast. Have a good day and support indie horror. This has been a Film Arcade Media production.